Despair, all ye nations, deny not that we're sick, for our blood is like water where once it was thick. And our minds have grown leaden, our bodies gone weak, and venom pours from our lips whenever we speak. Despair, all ye nations, for the time draws apace, when the rot of the cynic shall steal our good grace, and our sweetest of dreams shall fade to lost hope, our pride and our arrogance, our noose and our rope. Despair, all ye nations, see the years drawing on, our great cultures are fading, and soon they'll all be gone. So conceited our scholars, they jeer through their teeth, with their theories so shallow, quite soulless beneath. Despair, all ye nations, for the ending is near, when the Lord of lost heart shall govern us with fear. Our weakness unfetters as we face this unknown, and our faith trails to nothing. We stand here alone. Despair, all ye nations, the corrupter has come, and the sad days of this world are nearing their sum. For the shining ideals through endeavors we sought grow sour as he passes. They're coming to naught. Despair, all ye nations, there's no hope for us now. For we made this monster, placed a crown upon his brow. He fed upon our apathy, our pain made him swell. We give him dominion, he gives us his hell. Excerpted from the prescribed works of the poet and playwright Maximilian von Hohenstaufen, subsequent to his execution for heresy and subversion, most malign. In the gloaming darkness of one's librarium, there lies a secluded chamber. The seals upon it have been inscribed by practitioners of arts forbidden, by the decrees most sacred. Therein, one may pen records abominable, the necessary studies of concepts that would shred the mind, pollute the soul, and invite upon the student disaster beyond words. Within this chamber, one conceal oneself behind protective wards that cast back the eyes that lurk beyond, hungry, questing oculari, seeking those that ask too many questions, and ponder the secrets of the esoteric with altogether too much interest. Yet within, a page of parchment sits rotting. A subtle corruption has taken hold of it. Mold, crawling out in spiderweb patterns from the words themselves. It looks, for all the world, as if some damp has taken hold of it. Yet no such conditions exist within the librarium. I have been forced to examine my own writings with gauntlets, lest the corruption touch my bare flesh, for I trust it not. The inexorable passage across the parchment that this crawling rot seems to be taking sits ill with me, given its subject matter. Once one has committed it to this most sacred format of blessed audiography, I shall burn it forthwith. Know then that this is a record of the corruptive force at the heart of universal decay, the bloated, corpulent priest of plagues that blights the material world with untold suffering, a record of the chaos god Nurgle. Nurgle, known variously as Nurglitch, Onagal, Nirgal, Nurgleth, and others in Low Gothic offshoot dialects, as well as the more oblique titles of Crowfather, the Master of Pestilence, and the Plaguefather, is a greater intelligence of the Chaos Pantheon, a malevolent force of extra-universal decay. By the Corruptor's will, sicknesses are concocted, plagues are unleashed, and rot is riven into the material world. The Plague Father delights in the creation of ever more toxic and pestilential afflictions to bring to the world, reaping from their passage the sorrows of the infected and the wailing of their loved ones. His presence is a weeping aetheric sore, a cancer grown within the depths of the warp, whose sole purpose is to spread suffering and misery. It can safely be said that most anything mortal and sentient fears its own end. It is perhaps the oldest fear humanity possesses, and certainly one that we have bent impossible amounts of time and efforts into undoing or delaying. Within that fear dwells Nurgle, delighting in our slow, inexorable slide into the inevitable. He is the master of sickness, of plague, of viralities, all that bedevil our mortal forms. He weaves them as a tapestry of sorrow and suffering onto the skein of reality. The primordial annihilator, that is, chaos, is self-aware, after a fashion. It is fundamentally a universal force, or rather extra-universal, aligned with paranormal energies that emanate from our universe, linked, somehow, through emotions and ideas. Within the warp, ebbs and flows the dreams, hopes, fears, and nightmares of humanity, and indeed most all sentient species. By a fundamental quirk of reality, for a reason beyond explanation, the forces within the warp respond far, far more strongly to emotions that we would deem negative. Rage, emptiness, desire, possibility. The things in the warp feed upon belief. It is their foodstuff, their total nourishment, that from which they swell with grotesque power in their hideous realms. We deem them intelligences, although they are more akin to ideas with a motive force. There are four cardinal aspects around which the emotional tides of the immaterium bend, and those we have, by necessity, come to refer to as gods. Human language, any language spoken across the span of our history, has proven insufficient in rendering a term precisely for what these things are. They, by their nature, defy explanation in any conventional capacity. God is a fitting term, only to grasp the possibilities of their powers and influence. I, myself, prefer the term greater intelligence, given all that one has read upon the power of words, the power of faith, the power of belief that exists within this universe. I believe that to continue to use the term gods only increases the potential of these things. Nevertheless, one is forced to admit that such deific language is necessary. Only the Emperor himself is a being with power as divine enough to match the archenemy. The four greater intelligences draw unto them as much power as they can. They are formed and informed by us, by our actions, and in doing so seek to influence our kind. Nurgleth is one such, vying for purchase in this universe as his dread siblings seek the same, all eternally in competition, and yet also acting in unison. The perils of attempting to think about this too deeply. It has been remarked that out of all the emanations aligned to one or other of the greater intelligences, it is the servants of Nergleth that instill the most total revulsion in the human mind. This is no mean feat. The horrors of the warp are anathema to all sanity, and by their very nature are driven to embody that which triggers our most base and animalistic fear and loathing responses. The Plague Lord's gibbering, cadaverous servants are oft warped facsimiles of the human, appearing as putrid corpses afflicted with all manner of dreadful maladies, their thin, distended skin covered in weeping sores, necrotic organs spilling from ruptured bellies. That these are the mere foot soldiers of the Plague Lord, his sundry lesser emanations delight in taking forms redolent of entities which delight in rot, bloated, insectoid things that thrum slowly on fly-like wings, gibbering amphibian forms splashing around in their own corruptive pus and viscera. Nurgle is as much the product of fear and revulsion as he is of despair and decay. His servants are abundantly wretched, precisely in order to trigger the instinctive terrors of the failure of one's own body, or the primal instinct to flee from that which clearly bears diseases and poxes. When confronted with such things, it is the natural reaction of the person to recoil in disgust, a reaction increased exponentially when confronted with the plague-carrying servants, or worse, demons of the Lord of Maladies. The grandfather depends upon this, one suspects, just as much as our capitulation to despair. Debate exists as to just how much the Lord of Plagues is involved in the mortal plane. While it is believed in certain circles privy to forbidden knowledges that he is the most active of his eldritch contemporaries in the goings-on of reality, I am not so certain. Certainly, Nurgle reaps phenomenal power from the suffering caused by his machinations, and certain scholars of the damned have asserted that he, more than any of the greater intelligences, has the most profound reach. After all, cannot all physical matter succumb to decay? Is the process of entropy, universal heat death, not consigned to the crawling grasp of the Plague Father, ruler as he is of the slow end of all things? As one heretic put into words, the very process of construction and creation foreshadow destruction and decay. The palace of today is the ruin of tomorrow. The maiden of the morning is the crone of the night. The hope of the moment is but a foundational stone of everlasting regret. Decay is a thing of science, a measurable concept. It is not an emotion, such as is governed by the rage of the blood god or the yearning desire of the dark prince. If decay does not require mortal eyes to observe it, how then can a greater intelligence of the warp form out of a tumultuous psychic cascades that surround it? As another, long since past heretic, put it, the forest is here mist for the trees. Decay and disease are symptoms of the Plague Father's influence upon the physical world. They are not the core of his essence. As children, our innocence blinds us to the truth inherent in the grinding march of time. It is a realization, slow and painful, that we come to see as the years march on, and we observe, we feel, our bodies begin to change and function differently to how they once did. Fatigue becomes harder to shuck. Vitality is leached as we become torporous. Wounds persist longer than we feel they should. There is naught to be done about the state of affairs It simply is. We will die. Our families will die. Our friends will die. With this wisdom comes an inevitable sorrow, a fated resignation to mandatory annihilation. To know oneself is to know what one no longer is, and to fret over what one may become. Vision fails, joints ache, helplessness consumes, fostering a bitter resentment at the cruelties of fate. It is in this step, from realization to melancholy, bilious antipathy, that the plague god squats and rots, festering in the antagonism mortals have for their own decay. In this manner, the diseases, the viruses, the maladies of Nurgle's Garden are a means to an end. What better way to remind a human of their horrifically finite existence than to infect them with an incurable ailment, to force them to watch as their own bodies rebel against the sheer primal desire to simply exist. It is within submission to affliction that the seeds of the plague lord's hideous fruits bear fertile loam. One may attempt to deny a problem, fighting against the clawing onset of fear, worsening into a twisted vortex of anxiety and terror, desperation rising as the subject seeks answers to escape the reality of what is becoming ever more grimly real. Bitterness may spike, spite at the world that has led them to this point, the emotional or physical crutches they develop only lasting so long. Despair will set in. It is inevitable. If Nurgleth is indeed the deified personification of specifically mortal despair, then desperation, bitterness, resentment, fear itself, all of these feed his corpulent bulk. Despair alone cannot motivate his servants to work their worldly wickedness. Nay, despair is certainly the root of the Plague Lord's influences, but it is all that despair produces that galvanizes the fetid bodies of those caught within his thrall. The more bellicose of the faithful amongst the Adeptus Ministorum and the Holy Ordos of the Inquisition have penned many treatises on how, where the flock of humanity is concerned, such despair as commits one to the worship of the Grandfather is inherently an abandonment of hope of the Emperor's divine might, a determination that the Master of Mankind can do naught for oneself or one's soul, that one is beyond the salvation he promises his faithful. Such admissions are, naturally, heresy of the highest order, a definite act of will upon said person. They fundamentally reject the possibility of redemption. Our priests consider this an act of utmost arrogance. A human cannot convince themselves that their suffering is so unique, so beyond the pale, that even the God Emperor himself cannot grant them succor. That in the full scope of his beneficent omnipotence, they are the only ones beyond his reach. It is, these writers profess, a sin of utmost vanity. Despair itself should be considered the vergings of heresy. The God Emperor's realm is a perfect creation, they opine. Even the lowliest hab worker, eking out their 30 to 40 year standard lifespan in sunless poverty, should be thankful and not fall to despair, lest their soul become the prey of eldritch malignancies. Many a ministorum priest has stated that despair should thus be considered a sin on par with the rest, a destructive condition that rots the soul as surely as a plague may rot the body. One can, from certain perspectives, see the reasoning. Each of the gods, the greater intelligences of the warp, place those they wish to ensnare upon paths of damnation from the most seemingly innocuous of beginnings. A minuscule choice is presented at first, followed by a series of choices. Breadcrumbs upon a path strung out towards vilest ruin. Of all the intelligences, it is no great leap to say that Nurgle presents the least attractive of these paths. What he represents, how his followers and emanations present, are obscener beyond the words one has in one's diction. God and thralls alike are repulsive in every aspect. One would be forgiven for presupposing that no sane mortal would ever willingly submit to the worship of such a being. It is so obvious that the fate that lies before them is monstrous, painful beyond belief. But this, of course, is not the case. The influence of the Grandfather stretches across the galaxy and permeates every level of Imperial society, precisely because the paths of such worship are, fundamentally, universal experiences. It is essentially through emotional coercion that the Plagued Lord forces those under his thrall to submit. His is not a path eagerly sought after. One may pursue the excesses of the Dark Prince, or the raw power that the Blood God promises. No. Within Nurgle is promised only respite from the pain. Succor from what ails thee. A final chance to escape a seemingly inevitable ruin. His servants feel they have no choice but to worship him. What other choice is there? One has no doubt that the ambient human despair of the Imperium goes a long way to sustaining him. But it is quite apparent that Nurgle seeks more piquant flavors of desperation to grant him true power. Herein we see the dreadful application of plagues. Nurgle is not content to merely await the coming inevitabilities of mortal life. Quite the opposite, he willingly, gleefully, creates the situations that drive those desperate masses to his worship. The fear of an unstoppable plague transcends all boundaries of class and station. The rich may shelter themselves and utilize their capital to stave off the tendrils of an infection. But one stray cough from an underpaid subordinate, themselves forced to live without Medicaid rights in a tenement flat, can lay low even the wealthiest patriarch. This fear itself is an infection vector. It has been hypothesized that just how stress can deplete the human immune system, fear of warp-borne maladies can render one even more susceptible to their predations. Couple this with the generalized human superstition that one who is suffering from disfigurements of rampant diseases is sick within their very soul, corrupted in spirit as they are in body, and we behold a terrifying set of conditions that drive the despairing into the Grandfather's tender embrace. Yet for those who do, they shall find within the Lord of Plague's favor cold comfort indeed. As with his contemporaries in the Dark Pantheon, pleas for Nurgle's intercession are often answered, and quite visibly, but never in the fashion the petitioner has in mind. The Grandfather does not cure the sick. He does not lift the diseases he has inflicted. He does not stymie a virus's progress. Nurgle does not offer redemption from ailments. Instead, he grants his devotees comfort within their torment. It would appear that the malaises inflicted upon the devoted come to no longer pain them. It instead grants them a form of dark vitality, even joy or appreciation. Out of the depressive despair and wailing resignation comes a form of blissful acquiescence to suffering. Nurgle grants his followers a fetid permission to wallow. A servant of his simply no longer cares. The lassitude is the appeal. The universe, through its kindly grandfather, has granted the supplicant an ultimate surrender to joyful nihilism. Some may fight this, of course, pretending to feel a great shame in such wanton disregard. But for those who have suffered for so long, those that have struggled against their ending, against the sicknesses that ravage their decrepit mortal forms, there is another feeling, blissful in its abominance. Relief. A contented sigh let out through wheezing, cancerous lungs. Relaxation of atrophying limbs, now suffused with eldritch power invigorations. As their forms wither and bloat, as their bellies distend and putrefy, as they cry tears of pus, the devoted of Nurgle, in the ultimate usurpation of sanity, think it good. Nurgle is the god of the depressive and the deluded, the denialists and the irreparably insecure. He warps the very perceptions of those he ensnares. Many of his followers are considered jolly, reveling in their squalid forms and considering themselves blessed, the curse of rot transformed into the blessings of a kindly grandparent. Perhaps this is all a mask for a deepest self-loathing, or perhaps it is indeed a kind of release. Relief from the oppressive shackles of not merely universal inevitabilities, but social standards of cleanliness and wholeness. Yet even if doubt exists within the minds of the followers of Nurgle, even if they are fulsomely proud of their conditions, their realities are nevertheless twisted and usurped, so that the very pain of their abominable benefactor, one that he is responsible for, is in fact a gift beyond compare. The Lord of Plagues is an abusive spouse. He turns his victims into his devoted. He transforms hurt into love. His torture transformed into care. He is often misunderstood by the almost willfully ignorant as being a force of ecstatic prolificacy. He is the kindliest of the Dark Pantheon, these deluded say, as if such a thing could possibly exist. Nurgle may seem to care for his charges. This is but another facet of the means by which he extracts worship and devotion. The very thing the greater intelligences need to survive and thrive. Within their delusions is the sweetest of emotional energy. But his mortal thralls view their irreparably warped forms with frenzy, praising their patron for gifts that are in reality the objectively vilest of curses. Inasmuch as Nurgle is the god of decay, the lord of plagues, god of the dark pantheon of primordial annihilation, he is also an entire reality in himself, a dominion within the bowels of the warp. He is Onagol, the abhorrent darkness. To enter him is to be absorbed into nightmare itself. I have witnessed this hell that is Nurgle. I have walked the crumbling battlements of Onagol. I have followed those who have been damned by their actions to fuel Nurgle's endless hunger, and I have lingered within the very heart of decay. I have supped as an unwilling guest at the very fountain of despair, and all my hope is gone. With heavy steps, I have walked the morbid worlds of Nurgle's princes, his mightiest and most regarded demons. I have seen his chosen warriors, men who are both so much less and so much more than other mortals. They are Astartes, yet they are not. They are less than, they are more than, they are riven through with manifest malignancies, gifted by a wretched patron. Some of them are favored above all others, becoming champions of plague, only then to fight and slay for the chance to become a demon princeling in their own right. I have seen these Astartes and their plague fleets carry Nurgle's children to so many of the strange worlds in the Sea of Stars, where wars they bring are preceded by virulent cascades, devouring the populations before them. I have seen clouds of flies, thick as miasma, that move amongst the smog gases exhaled by corrupted once champions. I have seen their machines of death, belching pus and acid. I have seen their capering little lords, delighting in their sundry diminutive cruelties and constant flatulence. Moreover, I have seen the surrender to entropy. I have seen the submission to the inevitable, the delight in wholesale capitulation to pain and suffering. I have seen it cast as joy. I have been told by gibbering viscera encrusted lunatics that this is somehow love. That grandfather cares for them. I have glimpsed inside the warped realities these wretches embody, and I am lost. What hope is there? What hope ever was there? I fear I may have erred, including that particular passage. Such writings are, of course, the result of a mind broken, if not by active interest, then vague proximity to the scholarship of these damnable creatures. I must rest. My mind is overheavy with thoughts that do not become a loyal servant of... What is this? A little boil. No, that's No. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @oculusimperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.